My name is Ronnie Neff, and I'm assistant professor in environmental health sciences at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health, and I am a program director for food system sustainability at the Center for a Livable Future at Johns Hopkins, which is an academic center that focuses on the intersections between food systems and public health. And my topic is, what should these guidelines say? And, should they look like this? And this is a revision of the MyPlate graphic, where in the protein section it says legumes and nuts, and instead of that glass of milk, it has a glass of water. Is that what they should say? And I have no relationships of relevance to disclose. So I'm going to start by just talking briefly about how do we think about this question, and then I will talk a little bit about the existing recommendations, although those were just covered, so I'll move through that quickly, and then talk about some other essential sustainability considerations to include into the future. And I want to start by, we've all been talking about turning the clocks back in the past day or so, turning the clocks way back to 1986, when Kate Clancy and Joan DiGusso wrote what I believe is the first sort of summary and vision for what sustainability would look like in dietary guidelines. And it's been nearly 30 years. We're still working on it. But if you look at the list of things that they put in there, it's eat a variety of foods, maintain ideal weight, avoid too much fat, etc., eat foods with adequate starch and fiber. The thing you notice most about that is that it looks pretty much exactly like the rest of the dietary guidelines. And a message and a principle that they put out there, which I think still holds today, is that if we want to be successful, we have to frame sustainability in the dietary guidelines in terms of nutritional goals and the food security goals. And so what they recommended was taking these messages and then putting the sustainability angle on them. So meat's in there, but it's sort of buried in terms of avoid too much fat, saturated fat and cholesterol. So as was discussed in 2010, we did start talking about protein. And so the recommendation, for example, on meat was actually to reduce from 2.5 ounces per person per day down to 1.8. So this conversation was started, but in this time around, we really had the opportunity to move it up. And so the Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee summarized the reasons why we want to include sustainability. And they did go initially beyond a strict nutrition frame. They said global food production is responsible, they reminded us, for 80% of deforestation, over 70% of freshwater use, up to 30% of human-generated greenhouse gas emissions, and it's the largest cause of species biodiversity loss. But making it relevant to this process, they said the capacity to produce adequate food in the future is constrained by land use, declining soil fertility, soil loss, unsustainable water use, and overfishing. So these are some of the key concerns. And these slides will be available also if anybody's taking notes. So, and I won't repeat this, but they were framed around food security as the sort of underlying message. And they talked about seafood, which you'll hear about in a few minutes in Dr. Fry's presentation. They also talked about, and this has gotten a lot less attention, they talked about that we want to change what we eat, and they said there's no need to exclude certain foods. It's an overall pattern of what we're eating. And they talked about how food is produced. And this has gotten very little attention, but they said that we want to reduce environmental impacts, conserve resources, while meeting food and nutrition needs. So they're talking about sustainable agriculture as a message as well. This was then interpreted, as was discussed, here's in the New York Daily News, a federal panel recommends vegan diet for the first time, and President Obama is now leaning closer to a vegan diet. So why meat? Why is meat the thing that keeps raising to the top of this list? And the underlying reason that meat is such a concern from a sustainability perspective is that it takes so many resources to get there. So first you have to produce the feed, and then that feed has to be fed to the animals in an industrially produced system. So to make a quarter pound hamburger, we're talking 6.7 pounds of feed, 52.8 pounds of water, gallons of water, 74.5 square feet of grazing land, and over 1,000 BTUs of fossil energy, which is enough to power a microwave for 18 minutes. And then beyond that, meat is putting out tremendous greenhouse gas emissions. So about half of our food-related greenhouse gas emissions in this country are coming out of red meat and dairy, with 30% just coming out of red meat alone. And you'll also see that this drinks, oils, and snacks, by the way, are a pretty high percentage, and that's relevant because those often are foods that we never needed to eat. So that's why meat is so big in here, and I would say that if you're talking about more sustainably produced meats, for example, grass-fed beef, you don't have that issue where you're producing the food, but there's other reasons why the greenhouse gas emissions may be higher because of the way that they are raised. And so ultimately, it comes out about the same in terms of greenhouse gas emissions. So better in terms of other environmental effects, but not in terms of climate change. So what else do we promote in terms of the future, as we look towards the future, because it wasn't hard enough to get meat in there this year, so we're going to look at other sustainability concerns. And there's some really important ones that I think have these sort of hallmarks that we want. We want to recommendations that connect both the nutrition and the environment. And so I'm going to talk briefly about a couple of these. Encourage reduction in wasted food, look towards minimally processed foods and avoiding palm oil. Sustainable food production methods, have that be a more prominent part of dietary guidelines. Socially sustainable, so it's not only about the environmental impacts, it's about the workers, it's about the communities that live near where food is produced. Take a broad food systems perspective on sustainability, looking through the entire system and not only specifically in terms, not narrowing in on a specific piece of it. And then educate consumers about what this all means, and not just have it be something that's written in a government document and buried. So in terms of wasted food, why does this belong there? Well, about 40% of the post-harvest food supply in this country is wasted, and consumers are the number one wasters of food. And just about a month ago, the United States set a broad national goal that we're going to cut our food waste by half by 2030. So right there's an opportunity to link that in with dietary guidelines. And I've encouraged them, and I know others have as well, that their dietary guidelines graphic should mention wasted food. And they should give consumer and other advice for reducing waste. And the other one I want to mention is palm oil. So, which may be a little, and the reason I'm digging into it is because it's not as well known, but very many of our processed food products are made using palm oil as the oil. Our imports have doubled between 2005 and 2012, so we are now importing more palm oil than was in the BP spill. And the way you get that palm oil, you basically deforest. Often the forest areas are burned, as in that top picture, often in very sensitive lands, and then you're planting the palm trees. And so that means that the carbon that was sequestered in that soil is released, so it's a significant greenhouse gas emissions concern, and you get soil erosion because you no longer have that the things that were there holding the soil in place. And you're also damaging critical habitat and putting out soil and water contamination. And there's significant social impacts of the way we produce palm oil in terms of displaced communities and illegal land grabs. And a land grab is when you come in there and you basically are taking land in another country and using it for producing food that may then be exported. And the other reason that palm oil belongs there is because there's this very strong connection in terms of nutrition, and the foods that palm oil is going into are typically not the ones that we want people to eat. So I want to wrap up just by highlighting the research needs that the Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee felt were essential to moving this forward into the future, because many of you are researchers, and I hope that as you think about what your priorities are, maybe these will come to the top of your list. And so one is, what do we need to do to make sustainable diets more affordable and more accessible? And it's understanding what policy strategies are going to get us there through the supply chain, as well as other ways to make this more affordable. And I would add, although it's not mentioned here, but at the same time, that doesn't mean cutting farmers' salaries to the extent that they can't make a living either. We want to boost the whole system. The second thing they highlighted is, let's go in depth. How important is sustainability to Americans' food choices? And what do we need to do to increase that importance. So one of the main reasons that many of us want to see sustainability in the dietary guidelines, even if we're recommending the same foods that we would already be recommending, is because for some people, that's going to give them the added motivation that sort of pushes them over the edge in terms of what foods they choose. So how do we strengthen that piece? And then their final research need they highlighted was how production practices, supply chain decisions, consumer behaviors, and waste disposal affect environmental sustainability of various practices, and potential economic benefits and challenges to supply chain stakeholders. So they're talking about basically if we can better document all this, we can better make the case for what we need to prioritize and how, and we can also better make the case about potential profit benefits to producers within the supply chain. And why is the government pushing foods we regular folks don't like? It's the powerful vegan lobby. Thank you.